Welcome to The World According to Boyer, where we bring top investors, best-selling authors, and business leaders to show you the smartest ways to uncover value in the stock market. I'm your host, Jonathan Boyer. I'm really excited about today's special guest, Bill Wilson, CEO of publicly traded company Townsquare Media. Prior to joining Townsquare, Bill was president of AOL Media from 2006 to 2010. Before working at AOL, Bill started his career in the record industry, where he worked under the great Clive Davis. It's especially exciting to have Bill on the show today, as in full disclosure, I personally, as well as my clients, own shares in Townsquare. And Bill and his team have done a fantastic job, both operationally and in terms of capital allocation, which I want to discuss with him. We also recently featured Townsquare in our March 2024 Substack report, stating that, in our opinion, it is intrinsically undervalued. Without further ado, Bill, welcome to the show.
Jonathan, thank you so much for having me on the show.
As I said, I'm really excited. And before digging into Townsquare, just love to talk a little bit about your early career. You started in the record business after finishing your MBA. What was that like?
Well, I think I was very, very fortunate early on in my life. I had a very distinct perspective on what I wanted to do, which is rare. I have two children now, one graduating college and one just in college as a freshman. And when I was in middle school, I grew up in Teaneck, New Jersey, which I think also influenced my career and who I became as a person, because it was the first town in the United States to voluntarily desegregate in 1965. And my parents moved there in 1968. So it was a very diverse community, which I think helped form who I am today. But in junior high school, I read Clive's autobiography. I think it was a biography at the time, Clive Davis, that is. He had just started Arista Records after leaving Sony. And I was a big music fan. My family, I was never a musician in terms of capable skills in music, but I loved music. And my family always listened to music. And that had a profound impact on me. So I remember reading that biography and saying, one day I want to run an entertainment business, particularly a record label at the time. So fast forward, graduating with my MBA at Rutgers University, for literally 2 years, Jonathan, I wrote everybody who got promoted in the record business. There was a trade publication called Billboard, and there was a section called the Executive Turntable. And no exaggeration, for 2 years, I would go to the public library because it was a very expensive subscription, so I couldn't afford it at the time. And I would literally write a letter to everybody who got promoted. If you were from mailroom to mailroom manager, and one of the people who got promoted was Jack Rovner. He had left Sony and joined Arista. And I interviewed with Jack Rovner for about a year. And I was fortunate enough to be hired as Richard Sanders' assistant, who was an incredible mentor. I would not be in the position I am today without Richard Sanders' help. And it was a dream come true. I always wanted to work for either Clive Davis, who was at Arista, or Mo Austin at Warner Brothers. And I kind of manifested it and it happened.
That's amazing and shows the value of persistency. For those who have been living under a rock, you know, Clive Davis is legendary, discovered Whitney Houston, helped with Billy Joel, Bruce Springsteen, Aerosmith, basically anyone who's been in the music business over the past 40, 50 years. Were you able to work with him at all? Or
yeah, directly with him. So, you know, the book I read was published in 1975. It was called Inside the Record Business, and it was fascinating. It's still on Amazon. They're charging $50 these days, but definitely worth reading. He's actually had a more recent autobiography and a movie on Netflix for those interested. But not only did I work directly with him, it was probably my earliest influence of a leader running a company. The first thing that happened is SoundScan came about in 1991. And if you're familiar with the music industry, SoundScan was the first time it was actually tracking sales of records accurately. Before, they would just ship them out and there would be some qualitative conversation on the phone. How many of these did you sell by Sam Goody or The Wiz and so forth? And then SoundScan came out in 1991 and it was to the copy of how many CDs, how many vinyls were being sold. And I joined the company in 1992. And in the marketing department as an assistant, I started obviously at the bottom and working for Richard Sanders, who was running marketing. And Clive would track everything, you know, visits to radio stations, visits to record stores, promo tours, concerts. And there'd be reports about every artist. And I had an economics background and I actually taught econometrics as an undergraduate at SUNY Stony Brook. And so I started talking to Richard about, hey, we can actually look at all these variables and come up with cause and effect. So if an artist went on a promo tour or if they went to a radio station, did it have an impact? And we could correlate that to the market they did that in and the sound scan. And so I started creating a report and I gave it to Richard. And Richard, a lot of people in these days wouldn't have done that. He put my name on the report. He could have easily put his name on the report and sent it to Clive. So he's like, hey, just call it the Wilson Report. So I called it the Wilson Report. And after 2 or 3 weeks, I get a call from Clive's assistant, Rose. And she's like, Clive would like you to come up. And she's like, I come in and he's like, what is this? How are you doing this? How are you calculating these variables and these cause and effects? And I walked him through a model that I had created and he was fascinated. He gave me so much attention. And in essence, every week he started distributing it to all of his leaders in the company. And he has a very infamous luncheon meeting every week. It was every Thursday, started at 1 o'clock, and it would literally go from one until he was done. And he would go through every artist on the label. And he started to use, obviously, some of the information that I provided, but obviously a lot of other information. So going back to your original question, I had direct contact with him on a daily basis, and it helped. His level of detail, as you said in the introduction, from Whitney Houston to Sarah McLachlan to Kenny G to Aretha Franklin, Carlos, I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. When I was starting out, I was working with really small artists, a band called Spiritualized out of London. And what really struck me, Jonathan, is he cared just as much about an artist who was selling 20,000 copies as he did about Whitney Houston. And he gave that the attention. And that struck me as a leader that it's a responsibility. You have these brands and you're investing in these people's lives, you have to put as much attention on each one of them. And that stuck to me to this day.
That's amazing. Besides that, the attention to detail, because I'm always fascinated what makes someone a fantastic leader. What else made him great? Like, he's known as the man with the golden ear or whatever it is, but why was he so much better than everyone else?
I think his passion, first and foremost, his passion for the music, his passion for the artistry. I've never seen an individual work as hard as somebody did. And I remember talking to him at times and he didn't view it as work. He viewed it as almost a calling. I mean, I remember when Whitney Houston would go up against Mariah Carey back in 1993, 94, he would start the meeting by saying, you know, how are we doing with Whitney's new single? And the head of R&B or pop radio promotion would say, we're doing great. We've got 99 spins on this station. We've got 67 on the. And what also struck me, Jonathan, he never looked at any piece of paper. And he said, well, I don't understand how you could be pleased with 99 spins when Mariah on that same station has 102 spins for her song with Boys to Men. How can you be pleased if Mariah Carey's on top? And literally, Jonathan, he would do this for like the top 15, 20 markets without ever looking at a piece of paper. And then this meeting would go literally from anywhere the shortest 4 hours. Sometimes he'd have to order in dinner at 6 or 7 o'clock. And I think it's that passion and that level of detail. And he made everybody better in the room because they knew they needed to bring their A game every week. You couldn't walk into that meeting and not be prepared. So I think it's him as a leader, but also the culture he built of accountability. We have an accountability to these people's lives and profession, and we're not going to take that lightly.
For those of you who are not familiar with Town Square, maybe just give a brief background of what Town Square is and what you do, et cetera.
Yeah, so Town Square is a local media company focused on really the whole premise of the company originally was use radio as a Trojan horse to build a digital first company. And this was formed in 2010, originally with about 17 markets, 60 radio stations. And one of the important things, Jonathan, was the premise all along was A, build a digital company on the back of a radio company. And two, focus on markets outside the top 50 for two reasons. One, radio means a lot more in markets outside the top 50. And we can go through some of the statistics that bear that out. And two, the digital competition for digital advertising and digital marketing solutions is going to be a lot less competitive in markets outside the top 50 versus New York, LA, Chicago, and Nashville. So we're very proud of the radio business. And to me, we would never have had the success over the last 14 years in transforming into a digital first company without the DNA of radio. I grew up on radio. It's one of the reasons I decided to take this opportunity is, you know, my parents would be watching TV upstairs. I'd be having headphones on downstairs, listening to New York City radio, living in Teaneck, New Jersey. And I just know that companionship, that connection is unparalleled. There's nothing like that from watching a local newscaster on TV or reading a journalist. And so I really felt like harnessing that power of radio to build a digital connection and make sure people who joined radio to inform and entertain their communities were relevant for decades and decades and decades, no matter what happened with the radio audience. And thankfully, over the last decade, we've transformed the company from my successful radio company to a digital-first company that also owns radio stations, with now over 50% of our revenue and 50% of our profits coming from our digital divisions.
Can you talk a little bit more about the hyper-local importance? Why is that so important in today's day and age?
Yeah, I mean, you think about what's happened. We call them news deserts, right? So going back almost 6, 7, 8 years now, the newspapers, particularly in our size markets, but I think across the U.S., but when you, particularly in markets outside the top 50, have really been decimated. There's close to 2,000 newspapers that have been folded in the last decade, and the pandemic and COVID really accelerated some of those challenges. So it's a great business for us, but it's also, we feel like, a calling to make sure that these smaller markets are informed and have trustworthy journalists. You know, a lot of our hires over the last 5 years have actually come from the local newspapers. As they shed jobs and focus more on national content, we've actually picked up those reporters to serve that need. And we have them on the air, but we also have digital-only reporters creating content that, if you go to any one of our 300-plus local websites, I think most people would look at them as almost like a local newspaper. They wouldn't recognize that a radio company was behind them. So we think it's incredibly differentiated. We reach 1 in 2 adults listening to the AM/FM stations of ours because they're so local.
Can you explain that again? That statistic is unbelievable.
Yes. So on average, we're in 74 markets. On average, we own 4 FM radio stations and 2 AM. So 6 markets in a station on average. When you look at those 6 markets on a weekly basis, we reach 1 in 2 adults just through the AM/FM broadcast. So 50% of the adult population. You go back to asking about how I got from AOL to Townsquare earlier. That was Stephen Price's, who at that time was the CEO. Stephen Price and Stu Rosenstein were the co-founders of the company, had the vision early on. Stu's not only a co-founder, but also our current CFO. And Stephen's kind of pitch to me was, if I just walked into a room and told you that you could market for free to 50% of the adult population, and you can go out and create any digital products over the next 5 to 10 years, would that be compelling to you? I'm like, yeah, of course, if you can market 50% of the adult population. He goes, well, that's what we can do. And we can do that through our AM/FM radio stations. And we have the benefit of a great cash flow business that we think is going to be relatively stable for the next 5 to 10 years. And to your point, it's incredibly eye-opening. In the top 50 markets, say New York City, where you're sitting, the number one market share is probably about 20%. So reaching, obviously, 2 in 10 adults. So our company reaches 1 in 2 adults. So that, in essence, is one of the reasons we've had so much success with our digital products, is because we can market to free for 50% of the adult population. And if anybody on who's listening to your podcast knows, you know, radio overall has been a great reach medium. It's actually now the number one reach medium in America, because TV and cord cutting over the last 5 years has accelerated so much that TV used to be the number one reach medium. Now radio is. The challenge for the radio industry at large is time spent listening has been decreasing. For Townsquare, that's not the case. So our reach is rock stable, 50% of the adult population, and our time spent listening is rock stable. So that's one of the reasons we're generating so much free cash flow, because we have a relatively stable, what I call a traditional cash cow. It is a declining business over time, but it has so many great characteristics. A, the 50% adult population, and the 30% margin in terms of cash flow, it gets lumped into the rest of the industry, which has struggled. When you're lumped into an industry that 3 of the largest players, iHeart, Odyssey, and Cumulus, have either all been in or are currently in bankruptcy in the last 3 or 4 years, we kind of just got lumped into that. You know, I appreciate your time and research on the company, because when you peel back and start to look at what we've actually done in terms of the transformation and what our plans are over the next 3 to 5 years, you start to see the intrinsic value of the company, which, as you noted in your piece, and we believe, is tremendously undervalued at the stock price that it is today. And that's why we've been very aggressive in doing share buybacks, because we recognize that when people look up in 3 to 5 years, the price is going to be much higher. And let's take off what we can at this point with the cash on hand we have.
So why are your stations doing so much better than other ones? Let's say not the ones that are in the top 50 in the country, but why are your stations doing better than other kind of small and mid-sized markets?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a couple of factors. First of all, what you said, when you look at all the other major public radio companies, there's really nobody at scale, public or private, who focuses on markets outside the top 50. That's true not only of radio, but when you think about newspaper, if you think about television, there's nobody else with this strategy in local media that's that discipline not going into the top 50 markets. So that is a, I'd say, important reason to our success. The second reason is because we've had this digital success and this digital growth consistently year over year, it's allowed us to invest in local content. And the fact that I can hire a DJ and they're going to do a great on-air show that's going to be hyper local, but they're also creating content for all of our digital platforms. We call them the original social influencers, 360-degree content creators. So when they're posting articles to our websites, we're obviously able to draw a big audience. So I just shared with your listeners that through our AM/FM broadcast, we reach 1 in 2 adults. Through our local websites, we reach 70 of the adult population. So even more than our AM/FM broadcast. And that's because we are creating credible, original, entertaining, and informing local content for our website. So I would encourage your listeners to go to any one of our websites to see that. So with that business model, it would be very hard for a local broadcaster, and nobody in the industry has the digital percentage of revenue we have. We're over 50%, and no one's close to that. So it has afforded us to continue to invest in local content where others don't have the wherewithal to do that because they don't have this digital growth engine to be able to do that. And I think that's a fundamental strategic competitive advantage for Townsquare. And I think that only continues to widen as we look forward over the next 3 to 5 years.
So I know you're trying to, at least from the stock market narrative, pivot away from being a radio station, but it's still a good business and it helps obviously grow the digital footprint. So you have a 370 radio stations or so across the
Correct.
country.
Yes.
How many out there besides those that you own? Like, how big can you get in terms of radio? Because it seems like it's the return on investment would be fantastic.
You're exactly right. And listen, we're not trying to pivot away from radio. We just don't want to be perceived as a radio-only company. And as your piece in March noted, our multiple is actually less than other public radio companies at a 6x multiple. So we're not pivoting away from it. We embrace it. We love radio. We wouldn't be where we are without it. But we are not a radio company. We're a digital-first local media company, and therefore we think we should be valued on a multiple of traditional radio at 6x and our digital businesses at 10 to 12 to 14 times. So that's really the story we're trying to continue to gain understanding of. But going back to your question, there's so many regional, smaller players, mom and pops. There's hundreds to be able to be acquired, if not over 1,000. We actually recently did an acquisition, Jonathan, a small scale company called Cherry Creek, coming up on 2 years ago. So it was June of 2022. And we bought that at, call it 5.5x, 6x multiple, but they had no digital business. So when we look at acquisitions, we look at leading market share. So we want stations and brands that are in the top five, beloved by the community, with great local leadership, great sales teams. So they had their ingrained in that community and obviously markets outside the top 50. But we knew when we bought Cherry Creek that we'd be buying it, let's just call it a 6x multiple, and that within 5 years, that would be to 2 to 3x multiple because of the growth in digital. And I actually was just doing our first quarter financial review yesterday, and the growth in Cherry Creek in the last 2 years has been exactly as we expected. So there is a lot of opportunity for acquisition and taking what I would call traditional radio companies and building digital businesses alongside them, which is how Townsquare has done it for 14 years. And there's also the opportunity for organic growth. Even without acquisitions, we expect to be a high single-digit revenue growth driver and mid-single-digit profit driver over the next 5 years. Acquisitions would just be on top of that.
Does the government prohibit you from growing to a certain percent, or are you free to keep on buying radio stations?
Yeah. So I was actually the executive chair of the National Association of Broadcasting on the radio side. They represent radio and TV, an amazing organization led by Curtis Leggett. I just came back from the conference in Vegas, second largest conference outside of CES out there. And unfortunately, my views are the FCC is antiquated in their rules. The quadrennial rule 20 years ago has a cap where we're restricted from owning more than four FMs and two AMs in any of our markets. And 20 years ago, you didn't have Meta and you didn't have Google and you didn't have, you name your device or your platform that competes for people's attention. And we're limited. And I think that's unfair. I expect at some point, those limits will be taken away. And it'll be very accretive for us because we can add more distribution, more content, more AM, FM signals with really the infrastructure we have already of a sales team and a market president. But we're not limited from going out and acquiring additional markets. We're just limited to having more stations in the market we are. So Cherry Creek, we were able to add a number of markets that we didn't have, which is going to shape up quite nicely because we have a good presence in Montana, which is going to be a great political year for us. And then we picked up a station and a market in Sierra Vista, Arizona, which again, should be a great political market for us. So we are limited to how many we can own, but we're not limited to the number of markets we can operate in.
So there's plenty of room on the growth side there.
100%.
You were talking about not getting the multiple you deserve. You know, one way to do that is by having artificial intelligence in your name. You have been talking a little bit about how you're using AI. Just curious how you're using it in your business today.
Yeah, AI. I couldn't be more excited about artificial intelligence just from a business perspective, efficiency, productivity, as well as just being a citizen and what's going to transpire over the next 5 years. I'm just incredibly fascinated. But we actually, over the last 12 months, have been starting to leverage artificial intelligence for business processes. This gentleman by the name of Sun Sachs, he actually just won the Digital Leadership Award from the National Association of Broadcasting a couple of days ago in Vegas. Sun and I go back over 20 years. He was my head product at AOL, and he brought over a team of 15 to 20 people, including Aníbal Rosado and Juan Sari and many others. So I had the benefit when I joined, it wasn't just myself, it was almost 40 colleagues from AOL at the time. And he is really leveraging a lot of artificial intelligence for us. So I'll give you a couple examples. One would be, when we create creative or we create a website, traditionally we would start from scratch. I would call Boyer Value and say, okay, what assets do you have? What can you provide me so I could start to create digital advertising for you, be that a display ad or a video ad or anything else of that nature. He's created some AI that will plug in the name of the business, you plug in the URL of their website, and it'll scrape that website, come back with draft creative. Then the human is involved and they do the extra 10 or 15% on top of that to make it great. Show you, Jonathan, as the client, here's your creative, you sign off on it. Then they use AI instead of a human to put that across multiple sizes and platforms, where before it would take somebody, say, an hour to create multiple sizes of a display ad. We now use AI to do that. So obviously an amazing, efficient way to save time and energy and put that time and energy into other returns on those people's times. The other thing we're doing is in Town Square Interactive, we're using AI to listen to all the clients who call in, as well as all of the outbound sales calls we do. And we used to have a manager sit there and listen or transcribe and get some key takeaways from calls. Now we're using AI to go, okay, if a client is upgrading, what are the things they're upgrading for? If someone's looking to downgrade or if they have a problem with their service, what are those commonalities? When a sale pitch goes well and closes, what are those commonalities? We're using AI for all of that, where before it would literally be hundreds of hours of listening to calls. So those are just two examples of maybe 10 or 15 today that we're using. So when I think about the next 2, 3, 4 years, I think it's going to have a profound impact on our business. But quite honestly, I think it's going to have a profound impact on everybody's business.
Hey, Town Square AI. You get an AI multiple, the stock will rip. I hope you've been enjoying the interview. To read Boyer Research's report on Town Square, please visit boyerresearch.substack.com. And now back to the show. You had mentioned Town Square Interactive. Can you briefly explain what that business is?
Sure. So we have two significant digital businesses. One is Town Square Interactive and one is Town Square Ignite. Town Square Ignite is advertising and Town Square Interactive is digital marketing solutions. So I'll talk about Town Square Interactive. It was interesting, Jonathan, coming from AOL and New York City and big city media. One of the things when I started at Town Square that Stephen Price and Stu Rosenstein, they were very dedicated to going to every market. Back then it was 35, grew to 50, today 74, but literally go to every market every year. And I joined as chief content and digital officer back in 2010, and I would join them on these trips. And as we started to transform our digital websites, when I joined the company, we had no digital websites. We created digital websites. We created this audience that I told you earlier reaches 70% of the adult population. in one of our town halls, we'd always go in and we'd give an update on the company. But really, the benefit to us was hearing what was going well, but also the challenges and how we could do better for our clients, our community. What could we do better at corporate to help and empower the teams? So it was a 2-hour town hall, open questions, and an account executive in St. Cloud, Minnesota, it's about 90 minutes outside of Minneapolis, raised her hand and said, "We've done such a great job for our own brands and created tremendous value on our websites. Why aren't we doing that for our clients?" And I'm like, "Well, tell me more, because I'm coming from New York. I'm thinking everybody's got a website and they're good to go." And long story short, after hearing her and then doing market research in 5 of our markets, we realized there was a significant opportunity to provide digital marketing solutions. So building websites, helping people with search engine optimization, doing social media, helping them set up their profile on LinkedIn, anything you would think of for a business. So we started that business organically in the markets we were in back then when we were in less than 50 markets. This is in 2013, roughly. That business, in essence, over the past decade has added almost 10 million top line once it got it started and 3 million bottom line every year. So I think last year was over 80 million in revenue at roughly a high 20% margin. After a few years of only being in our markets, Jonathan, we realized, I wouldn't call it by mistake, but there was a seller in our Fort Collins market in Colorado, which is about an hour outside of Denver, who started selling the same product and solution to small SMBs. Our target was businesses with less than 20 employees, less than 5 million in revenue. So pretty small businesses. And they were going home one day or on a trip to Colorado Springs, which isn't a market we had radio stations in. And they're saying, "Hey, I see there's a need here for the same thing. Can I sell it?" I'm like, "Of course." So then all of a sudden we started testing a call center in Charlotte and started calling into like-sized markets. So again, markets outside the top 50 and offering the same service. And today, 70% of our Townsquare Interactive clients are outside of our radio footprint and roughly 30 are inside. And it's a monthly subscription business. So as a small business owner, you're giving us your credit card. On average, we're charging you about $300 a month and it's a recurring revenue stream. And that's almost 20% of the company's revenue and profits today. And we see significant, significant opportunity over the next 10 years to continue to grow that business and grow that first over 100 million, then over 200, and then keep going. We have a great slide in our investor deck that talks about there's 9 million target customers here with a $32 billion TAM opportunity. So a lot of runway for us. We did take a step back last year, first time ever, we lost some subscribers. And that was really two things that happened. Self-inflicted wound of having a return to work mandate, because coming out of COVID, Charlotte was our largest office with over 500 employees. And they all were working remotely for a couple of years. And in 2022, we had a return to work decision that if you were either a new employee or not a tenured high performer, you needed to come back at least hybridly. And we lost more people in 24 months in that division than we had lost in the first 9 years. And that created a lot of turmoil with our customer base and our client base. And then obviously in 2023, there was significant inflation, wage pressures on these small businesses. So last year, we took a step back in that business. And as I said recently on our earnings call in March, my expectation is we return to subscriber growth in Q2 of this year. And then after subscriber growth, you'll also start to see month over month revenue growth. And I expect that in Q2 this year. And that'll be followed by month over month profit growth. It really depends on how quickly we're investing. Given what we're seeing now, we're investing quite heavily in the business. We opened a second location in Phoenix last year. And given the runway and our current metrics, we're investing quite heavily. So profit will return month over month growth, either in Q3 or Q4, depending on how much we can invest right now.
So you had a bunch of employees who essentially quit when you told them they had to actually step foot in an office, and that made customer service deteriorate and some of these subscribers left. Is that basically what happened?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what happened. And to be honest with you, obviously it was a somewhat unexpected in terms of the magnitude of that. Truthfully, I believe it made us a stronger company. We got knocked out. Let's call it what it was. Like literally every quarter for many, many years, we were adding roughly 800 net subscribers, sometimes 1,000, but very, very consistent. All of a sudden, last year, we lost, I call it 7,000 subscribers. We cut that Q4 to Q1, we told people we'd cut that in half. So we'd be under 800 losses in Q1 and return to growth in Q2, as I just said. But we took it on the chin. So we said, okay, let's take this opportunity and really attack ourselves. We built a company from zero to $90 million with a, call it a 30% profit margin. What would we do differently to take a company from 90 million in revenue to make it 250 million in revenue? And so one big change we did is we used to have a one-to-one customer service model. So Jonathan, if you called in, you would get Johnny and Johnny's manager would be Susie. And so obviously when Johnny left, that was very disruptive for you. You're used to talking to Johnny. He was your marketing consultant. So we decided to go to a pooled model where when you call in today, you may not get Johnny. You're going to get somebody who knows your business, knows why you called before, and handle whatever your questions or your needs are. And to your question earlier, we're starting to use artificial intelligence on those calls as well. I think that's a much more efficient model. Our answer rates have gone up almost 100% because before, if you called in and you were talking to Johnny, Johnny used to handle 200 businesses. When I called in as another client, I may go to voicemail because Johnny's on the phone. So this is a much more efficient in terms of how to scale, and I think a better customer service model for our subscribers. So there were many things like that. We don't have enough time to go through them all in this podcast, but I am incredibly confident Townsquare Interactive is a stronger company today because of the setback we faced last year.
In terms of the Townsquare Interactive piece of your business, I mean, you said now a large percentage of it is not in your traditional radio markets. How do you leverage having the radio stations in those markets? Like, how do they go together?
So in the 70% of the clients who are outside the market has nothing to do with radio. There's no overlap. In the 30% where we are selling Townsquare Interactive, we're utilizing our existing sales teams to provide referrals to our Townsquare Interactive team. So I think going back to one of your questions, like, why are you performing so much better just radio to radio companies, putting aside the success you've had in growing a very profitable digital business? Part of it is we have full funnel marketing solutions. So meaning clients don't want to deal with multiple vendors. Well, Gordon Burrell has done a number of studies where 10 years ago, a small business would work with, quite honestly, 10 different providers, be it the Yellow Pages, the newspaper, television, radio, outdoor company. Today, they want to work with one or two providers who could really handle their advertising and marketing needs. So you want to be really one of one. And the only way to do that is to have full funnel solutions. So the fact that we've got radio, which is the best cost-effective reach medium, but then we've got this programmatic digital business, and then we could also help you with your website, build your website, make sure you're on the front page of Google for the appropriate search terms. That is highly differentiated and a competitive advantage. So going back to your question, in the 30% of the sales where they're coming from our markets, it's part of the same pitch that we're pitching advertising. So it is one ecosystem in those markets.
Wall Street hasn't been as kind to you as it should be, at least in our opinion, in terms of the valuation. It seemed like the Townsquare Interactive would get a higher multiple. Have you ever considered spinning out that portion? Would that make sense?
We get a lot of questions about that. Is that a possibility one day? It could be, but the characteristics of helping the radio division and that overlap is powerful. So could that happen? Yes, because they could obviously be an arm's length relationship. But my view is we are going to get that value, particularly as we today are, call it 50% of our revenue, 55% of our profits coming from digital. Fast forward just 2 or 3 years, I expect that to be over 60%. And then think 5 years, I expect that to be 70% revenue of digital and 70% digital profit. So we're extremely patient. I mean, just like you are as investors, like I read a lot of your materials. We have the same approach where as long as we stay disciplined, consistent, I think we have a culture of high performance and accountability. We're not worried how we're valued today. We're trying to unlock value. We're delevering. We get the advantage of our stock price being so undervalued. We're able to retire millions and millions of shares at it, we think, is a ridiculously low price. I think part of the story, Jonathan, is A, we're lumped in with radio traditionally, and I think we're starting to break out of that box. Two, we've been highly levered. We stated for a little while that we were going to come down from 6 times. We stayed above 6 times for quite some time. We've got our lowest net leverage, in essence, in quite a while at 4.4 times. We expect that over the next 18 to 24 months to come down to 3 times. So I expect that to be a material difference in the eyes of investors. As you know, we just initiated a dividend a year ago. We increased that dividend by 5% in March on our year-end call. It's now, you know, I think it's about a 6.5% yield. You talked about pivoting from the radio business before. What I think we're doing is pivoting to really putting a spotlight on our cash flow generation. We continue to do amazing in terms of growing our cash flow from operations. And by initiating the dividend, based on the investor meetings I've had, that new investors who discovered the company, I think it's clear that was a great, almost a marketing strategy on its own to get people to recognize the company. So we're just going to stay disciplined. We're going to continue to delever. We're going to continue to grow our overall profits. And the mix is going to be more and more digital revenue, more and more digital profits. And to your point, the intrinsic value, I think in your piece was called $25. We think not only we're going to get there, our aspirations are much higher as long as we continue to execute and grow the overall business.
Yeah, no, I mean, you've done a fantastic job in terms of capital allocation. And I think it helps that you personally own a lot of the company because you have skin in the game. I mean, I think at least on our calculation, you've purchased about 60% of shares and warrants outstanding, you know, at an average price of a little over $7. Its share price now is 12, which is great, assuming the shares are undervalued. But does the leverage keep you up at night in an uncertain world?
Not at all. Because I mean, just think about our cash flow generation. Obviously, if we were concerned at all about that, we wouldn't be buying back as aggressively as the share. We'd just be hoarding the cash. So, and you noted this in your piece, if you just look at the free cash flow yield and you look at the free cash flow versus the market cap at, and I don't know if that's three or four, just incredibly undervalued. We talked about multiples before of EBITDA. I would encourage people, just look at our free cash flow. You noted in your piece, the three-year average in that, it's consistent. It's not like 1 year was great and a couple of years were subpar. Each and every year, even after last year, which I would call a subpar year for the company overall because of the step back in subscribers at Townsquare Interactive, we still had a great year. Second highest revenue, second highest profit in the company's history. So going back to your question, not at all. I think as I moved into this role, putting aside COVID, in 2019, I became the sole CEO when I think we were about over 6x levered, and we've marched that down to about 4.4. And we said we were going to do that. We're going to continue to do that. I think, as I said earlier, we'll get that under 4 and closer to 3 over the next 2 years.
Do you like being CEO of a public company?
I like being CEO. I'm blessed. I have an incredible family. This is a dream come true for me in terms of the job and the people I work with, the culture we built. I'm incredibly proud of the Townsquare team. I feel it's an honor to represent the team. They're obviously doing all the work. The corporate office is extremely small. We're talking about, even with the accounting team, you're talking about less than 50 people. So with over 2,200 employees, the people doing the work are all in the markets, serving their communities and their clients. And to me, that's what Townsquare is about. It's like, how do we serve these tremendously underserved communities? How do we help these clients? And that's what we're really, really proud of, helping these business owners reach their dreams. So I love being the CEO of Townsquare. I look forward to doing this for as long as the board will have me. The board couldn't be more supportive. As a first-time CEO, has given me tremendous advice. They have long-term vision. I can't say enough about the Townsquare board. But obviously, being a public company, you spend a lot of time on things that maybe aren't the most effective. It's just sometimes there's things you got to do that are a waste of time. Thankfully, I have an amazing corporate team. Our COO, Eric Hellum, a tremendous business partner. He actually started in the radio industry. So it's been a great combination of somebody like myself with the digital background. He started decades ago and been in the radio industry the whole time. And we wouldn't be where we are without Eric Hellum. So I love being the CEO of Townsquare. I could see us being private or public and being just as happy.
Would you be doing anything different if you were a private company now?
Nothing in terms of strategic decisions or decisions. So I'm sure everybody says this, but as I said, going back to the board, they have impressed on me from day one. As we plan, say 2025, we're thinking about what's the right thing for 2030, and that should be factored into your plan for 2025. So we're never making short-term decisions for the next quarter or quite honestly, even the next 12 months. If that was the case, Jonathan, we would have actually stopped our investment in Townsquare Interactive last year while we had an off year and said, okay, let's take a step back. Let's make sure we've got this right. They were like, if you're confident, continue to invest. We continue to hire throughout this significant downturn where our revenue was down 15% in Q4 for Townsquare Interactive. So no, being a public company, we're not making decisions that are different than if we were private. It's just, there's a lot of auditing and a lot of the stuff around SOX compliance and things we have to do that we wouldn't necessarily do. We definitely wouldn't do if we were a private company. They just added personnel for SOX compliance that we wouldn't have.
Would it shock you one day if you were part of another company or if the company was private?
Not at all. I think about it one of two ways. As you said, A lot of my compensation personally has been part of stock-based compensation. When I joined in 2010, in essence, Stephen Price said, I can't pay you what you make at AOL. My salary back then was public because I was an officer of AOL as a public company. So I took about a 50% cash comp step back. And my wife was a big part of that decision, obviously, because we had a family. And I got that in stock-based comp before I was CEO. And then now about 30 to 40% of my compensation is stock-based versus cash. And a lot of that is performance-based, meaning I earn the RSUs only if there's different hurdles hit in terms of shareholder value. So I think all in, if you look at unvested invested, I probably have 1 million shares in the company. So it's significant to your point of making sure the business is run right. And that's why we're going to make long-term decisions and never short-term decisions. But I think one of two things is going to happen. Let's say 5 years from now, just to pick a number. Our stock is either going to be significantly higher, not only what you said at 25, but significantly higher above that in 5 years, or we'll have the wherewithal to go private. That's the way I look at things. If we were sitting here in 3-4 years at the same stock price, given our cash flow generation and our ability to, in essence, delever, we could take the company private.
So I just want to talk a little bit about digital advertising, and you have the Ignite piece, part of the business. It's a little bit harder for people to, I guess, understand. You gave us a fantastic demonstration, I think probably 2 years ago, of the power behind that. Can you explain what it is for people who might not be as digital savvy?
Yes. Thank you, Jonathan, for asking us. So for your listeners, we have a division of the company called Townsquare Ignite. So we talked earlier about Interactive, which was the subscription business for website building and SEO and things like that. Ignite is our digital advertising business. And within that, there's really two components. There's monetizing the significant scale of audience we have on our property. So we have over 300 websites, over 300 mobile apps, and there's a significant size at scale audience there. We collect first party data on that audience. So in a world where cookies go away, it's highly valuable.
What's first party data, just for those who don't understand?
So first party data would be getting information when they come to your website about their interests. So are they reading a personal finance article? Are they reading an article about real estate? Are they reading an article about nutrition or medical? And knowing that about an individual, you can get that data on the open marketplace from third parties and you pay an effective CPM for that data. But as I said earlier, we reach 70% of the adult population. So I believe nobody has as much data on the people in our 74 markets than Townsquare has. So that's a very, very significant competitive advantage in the digital advertising landscape. So that's one component of Townsquare Ignite. The other component of Townsquare Ignite is programmatic advertising. So we're able to buy inventory across the internet. We are integrated with all of the major exchanges. If you're familiar with Trade Desk, Simplify, Xandr, Madhive, there's literally dozens and dozens of companies that aggregate inventory across any connected device. So not just a traditional PC or laptop, but you're watching your Samsung TV and you're watching Netflix now added advertising, Hulu, Disney Channel. If you're watching ESPN, all of these are now being served advertising through a connected device. One of the fastest growing parts of the company is serving programmatic digital advertising, highly targeted. So as Jonathan, you described a couple of years ago when we met in your office, you're like, you know, I think I understand this. Can you demonstrate this for me? So we actually, with Jonathan and his team, walked through a presentation where he was a small business in one of our markets and we gave him a pitch. And I think all the light bulbs went off, which is great. So you tell me, you're a business, say you're an HVAC company in Tyler, Texas. Who is your ideal customer? What's their household income? Where do they live? What are their interests? I then go find those customers. First, I create the advertising for you. I A/B test that to make sure the creative is the best it can be, continually optimizing that creative. And then I serve that ad to the right individual being that target demographic you described. And then I optimize where that ad shows up. Should it show up on a Hulu show? Should it show up on a Disney show? Should it show up on the Weather Channel? And we see which one performs best. And performs best is really defined by the client. What is their key performance indicator? Are they looking for awareness? Are they looking for a form fill? Are they looking to convert to a paying subscriber for e-commerce? It's incredibly powerful. And when you think about what we've been talking about, Jonathan, where Townsquare is focused on markets outside the top 50, my belief is no one can do this better than we can. And we're quite pleased with the growth where we are. It's the fastest growing part of the company in terms of revenue and profit for the last 5 years. But when we think about the next decade, you think about 69% of all advertising today in the United States, local advertising, is digital advertising. That is expected to grow almost to 80% in the next 5 years. So we've got this tailwind behind our back of growth in digital advertising. We believe we're highly differentiated in that space. And then even if it wasn't growing as much as it is, based on our data from Gordon Burrell and Associates, today in 2023, we captured less than 15% of the addressable digital market in our markets. So there's so much more share shift that can happen. And then you have share shift plus the benefit of a growing market. And that's why we're as excited as we are about Townsquare Ignite, our digital advertising arm.
Is there a big overlap between the customers at Townsquare Ignite and Townsquare Interactive?
Very little overlap. I think part of the reason is our Ignite customers, there is some overlap, but I'd say less than 20% because the Ignite customers are usually much larger in scale, have a lot more money to spend than the smaller customers that we're focused on for Townsquare Interactive. So incredible opportunity with Townsquare Ignite, and it's performed extremely well year in and year out, and we're excited for the next 5 to 10 years in that space.
Your competitive advantage, I guess, on Ignite, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is you have all these websites that you created in those smaller towns, and you're able to target people in small communities. And that's why someone would want to use your marketing agency. Is that?
That's one component of it. The other component is, A, we've got all this first party data. Two, we have a team. There's roughly 100 people who buy media, optimize media. The creative is a big part of this in terms of the messaging and the visuals we're doing now. In essence, we're doing television advertising for clients. We weren't able to do that 5 years ago because we didn't own television stations. But now with cord cutting and as much inventory with streaming television, we're in essence competing with cable television and network television. So part of the differentiation there is we've got this huge scale of hundreds, if not sometimes thousands of campaigns for lawyers, doctors, plastic surgeons, HVAC, you name a vertical. And quite honestly, I could sit down with you. We're doing this in the home improvement space and particularly HVAC. And I could sit down with you and say, we've done this campaign for over 500 customers across the US that look just like you. This is what they did prior to working with Townsquare. And this is what they're doing today. So having that scale and that expertise in verticals is highly differentiated. Again, particularly in markets outside the top 50. In addition, we're often competing with local agencies. There's a digital agency in every one of our 74 markets. They're utilizing usually free exchanges. They go on Facebook. My son buys ads on Facebook. There's no barrier to entry. You could buy display advertising through Google. There's no barrier to entry. But we're sitting at exchanges that have 6 or 7 figure minimums per month in spend. So a local agency wouldn't be able to do that necessarily in Tyler, Texas. But because we're bringing this, I'd call it national sophistication to small town America, it gives us outside differentiation in terms of purchasing power for inventory, as well as just the ability to see the amount of inventory we can. And that may matter less in New York, but when you're in Tyler, Texas with 300,000 people and you want to reach somebody with a household income of 75,000 who has 2 kids, drives a Honda Odyssey and loves MMA, there's only so many opportunities you have to do that. So the more inventory you have to not only reach that person, but to optimize that creative, make sure that you're reaching them on the right platform. We take great pride in that. And we live and die by the results we provide our clients. So I view that as highly differentiated for Townsquare versus others that we're competing with in our size markets.
Bill, I want to thank you for your time. It's been fantastic learning about your career, working with Clive Davis to AOL, to then going to Townsquare, where you took kind of a big risk in terms of a pay cut to try and build something great. I look forward to monitoring your progress and following Townsquare. And I think the best days are still ahead.
I agree, Jonathan. Thank you so much. It's been an honor. It's been a pleasure. And I look forward for all your listeners, hopefully, to learn more about Townsquare and spend some more time understanding the company. And if anybody has any questions, they could always reach out to me at any time. My email address is bill@townsquaremedia.com. And thank you again, Jonathan.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed the show. To be sure you never miss another World According to Boyer episode, please follow us on Twitter @BoyerValue. Until next time.